The boundaries have been broken.
Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
I believe that your primitive cerebrum kept trying to wake up. This is Jeff Beck. I'm your host for
The Truth Is No Defense.
When the English General Cornwallis presented his sword to General Washington and the French General Rochambeau at Yorktown in 1781, the long and bloody Revolutionary War, started by the 13 American colonies, had finally ended. Washington then ordered the band to play When the World Turned Upside Down, a popular tune of that time. The American Revolution of 1776 did turn the world upside down, as Professor Gordon S. Wood has written in his book, The Radicalism of the American Revolution. But to many Americans, the radicalism of the Revolution is unknown. And even to Americans with an interest in history, most contrast the bloodthirsty mayhem of the French Revolution of 1798, just a few years after our own, and assume, according to the cliché, that our revolution was a conservative revolution. Wood argues life in the colonies was changed radically after the revolution. In many ways, the world men like Adams and Washington and Jefferson were born into was closer to feudal Europe than the world we now live in. It was a world of fealty, where society had many distinct classes, and each class owed obligation to those below it and service to those above it. It was a society linked by personal loyalties, and where the private and the public was hardly separated. It was a society united by blood and family, a society organized much differently than the one the founders unleashed in 1776. The new nation would be one open to new men. It was based upon contract and law, not upon family ties or traditions or venerated loyalties. The system created by the revolutionaries of 1776 worked well for a century or so, if one overlooks the internal strife of 1860 to 65. Overall, Americans, and let me define American, white European tribes, mainly from Western Europe, these tribes enjoyed the salutary benefits of limited government, an expanding economy, and high levels of personal freedom. The system created by the founders did not, unfortunately, survive the upheavals of the 20th century. A few legacy artifacts persist, if only anemically. For instance, the right to bear arms and the right to free speech. But the right to free association and the right to be free from warrantless searches has disappeared. Really. What does remain is a twisted wreck of conflicting laws and confused customs. What remains is not worth saving. The sooner we recognize we're living in a grinning tyranny that has assumed the form of a constitutional republic created centuries ago, and the sooner we give up the folly of restoring the Constitution and focus instead upon creating a new system, a new system for our people, the better is our chance for survival. And when I say our chance, I mean white Americans and the culture, customs, and genetics we are heir to. We may draw inspiration from the old system, and we may certainly learn from the failures of the old system. But the idea of resurrecting the old republic is puerile fantasy. The toothpaste is out of the tube, and any honest evaluation of Congress reveals the numbers do not exist to vote our way out of this mess. And that assumes that the will and the courage exists within the government to fix the mess we're in, which it does not. Besides, we know much more about the world than Jefferson or Madison did, especially in two important areas, biology and mass media. The founders weren't ignorant about media and biology. Jefferson, the patient, astute observer, recognized that, quote, blacks are inferior to whites in both body and mind, end quote. But perhaps seeing the forces of egalitarianism, which he had a role in unleashing, he said this, quote, nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate that these people, the blacks, are one day to be free. Nor is it less certain that the two races, equally free, cannot live in the same government. Nature, habit, opinion has drawn indelible lines of distinction between them. End quote. But what they intuitively knew about race through observation, we know from science and the costly failures of the welfare state. The other founders, too, knew the reality of race, and it was not just Jefferson. For instance, John Jay, who said, quote, Providence has been pleased to give this one connected country to one united people, a people descended from the same ancestors, speaking the same language, professing the same religion, attached to the same principles of government, very similar in their manners and custom. End quote. Multiculturalism was as abhorrent to the founders as it is to white nationalists today. Benjamin Franklin even lamented the settlement of Germans in Pennsylvania, saying they were too foreign for his taste. Imagine if the founders could see the mobs of mestizos marching in the streets of Los Angeles and Chicago. Surely Washington would raise an army and dispatch the invaders. Worse, consider their reaction if they discovered that Jews were in control of the mass media. The media in 1776 was as vicious and partisan as it is today, but the media's scope was almost always local. The great thinkers of the day like Hume and Locke and Smith were read by only a few men, but even those ideas had a powerful effect upon the world. Today, we live in an age of mass communication, mass media, mass man. We know from experience and sociology the effect of mass communications on the public. This the founders did not know. This effect often manifests itself in the so-called lemming phenomenon, where a citizenry whose minds are systematically captivated by the mass media and then are deprived of the tools and information they need to think critically about the problems of the day. Washington and Jefferson both understood that a free people could only remain so by being sober, informed, and disciplined. The mass media ensures that the public is numbed, misinformed, and fat. Lemmings really are to be pitied. They are victims of television, newsprint, billboards, and the music industry, either in the hands of the Jews or serving the Jews' interests. And of course, the Jews' interest is Israel and the exploitation of the society which hosts them. This is what Washington warned us about in his farewell address of 1796. Quote, so likewise, a passionate attachment of one nation for another produces a variety of evils. sympathy for the favorite nation, facilitating the illusion of imaginary common interests in cases where no common interest exists, and infusing into the one the hatreds of the other, betrays the former into participation into the quarrels and wars of the latter. This is exactly the mess we find ourselves in Iraq and the rest of the world today. Washington, in his farewell address, warned us not only about entangling alliances with overseas nations, but also about elements within the nation serving foreign powers. Despite the warnings of Washington and the wisdom of Jefferson, we need to acknowledge, however much we all might love the old system, it is irreparably compromised. The goals of the coming revolution must be clear. Our nation is our race. Our nation is for our race. And our nation serves the interests of our race. We need to consecrate a nation dedicated to the uplifting and improving of our race, not to the defilement of it. You must look at what is happening today and come to recognize that we have lost. Whites have lost control of the government that was created for our prosperity. This government serves the interests of Jews and blacks and Mexicans, but it does not serve our interests. The procedure for dispensing with the old system is beyond the scope of this broadcast, but dispense with it we must, before it dispenses with us. Perhaps after the revolution a grand council could be formed, members of which are selected on their basis of service and leadership in the revolution. Perhaps brothers or other family members of those that had fallen and died might also be selected for service. This is only speculation, but perhaps I could continue. This group over generations might develop into a natural aristocracy. Perhaps a sort of nobility might arise, a nobility bred and identified by their allegiance or fealty to the race. Perhaps we could develop a society not based upon rights and laws, but on obligation, service, and reciprocity, and custom, all serving the race. A society which would stress the collective interest of our race. Perhaps a society more feudal in orientation. Perhaps one whose mission it is to preserve the race and the soil. One with a respect for commerce, but not at the expense of the blood. In Wood's book, The Radicalism of the American Revolution, he describes the world the founders knew before the revolution as one in which business and personal and private aspects of life were intertwined. The household, the society, the state, private and public spheres were scarcely separated. Authority and liberty flowed not from political organizations of society, but from the structure of personal relationships. Well, this could be called fealty. It seems to me that the type of society we need is a Volkish society, a society where people are united by bonds of family and blood and status, a society where the outsider can be identified and excluded. This is Jeff Beck. Thanks for listening.